AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
R&B money!
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Tank.
I'm Jay Valentine.
And this is the R&B Money Podcast, the authority on all things R&B.
Yeah. You want to be happy? Yeah. You want to be happy?
Let's get into the thick of it. Pause. We're talking 90s R&B.
What?
Huh?
A guy.
The shit that's missing.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
That we are still trying to capture and encapsulate.
Yeah.
In today's time in 2024.
That's a perfect word. Missing.
Missing.
They're missing you.
Missing you. Ladies and gentlemen, Case in the building.
What up, y'all? This is Dale, yo.
Shit.
Yeah.
This is Dale, yo. Good to be here.
I'm starting it off like this. It was a guy by the name of Greg Baker. I don't know if you know Greg Baker.
Oh, yeah.
You know Greg Baker?
Oh, yeah.
Greg Baker was trying to recruit me out to church to sing R&B music.
Say word.
Absolutely. At that time, he's working your record, Touch Me, Tease Me, in D.C.
New Grex's High School.
No way.
That's G Wiz, brother, from Heavy D and the Boys.
So you know how smoking hot you was in the DMV. You were on fire.
Yeah. It was a lovely time. It was a lovely time.
I know you reaped said benefits.
Yeah, I was the Grim Reaper.
Chocolate City.
I can't wait to be hot in D.C.
Oh, boy. Listen.
Man.
Boy.
Because I've been there.
You were the recruiting tool. Listen to this. You too can be this.
Let's get it.
You too can touch me, tease me. I was like, but the Lord.
Shit.
The Lord doesn't want me to touch and tease these ladies. He wants me to pray, touch, and agree with these ladies. And I wouldn't go. But I remember that moment like it was yesterday.
Yeah, Greg, that's my dude.
And he was, listen, you were the selling point. He was like, don't you want this shit like this? And yeah, you were it.
Yeah,
it was killing.
Yeah, it was popping in DC.
And then a year later, I decided to do R&B.
Yeah, come on over.
McCliff and Jerry, and he got mad. He saw me. He said, "Now you're doing fucking R&B. I was trying to recruit you."
Yeah, that makes me mad. Yeah.
But that's been my nigga ever since. We always talk about that story, man.
Yeah, that's funny.
And since day one meeting you, like, you're shit. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Case, bro.
Nah,
that is a very true statement.
I've never.
Yeah, because I just try to stay out the way. Don't talk about people. Don't get in there. I stay to myself. I do what I do. I show love, and I get love back.
Always show love.
Yeah. Always show love.
Yeah. Always. Always.
For got you. Sure.
For
got
sure.
You. And listen, and we'll get into that because we want to go in chronological order, but you went toe-to-toe with Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. There's a funny story behind that, too.
That ain't.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there. You went toe-to-toe with Joe.
Yeah.
And got to it. All right, let's go back. Joe, Case, where does this all start? Where does this all begin? How do you become Case?
Man, it started when I was a little kid. I got pictures when I was like 2-3 years old performing for company. My grandmother, her thing was all her grandkids had to know everything about Ray Charles and everything about James Brown or you was getting out.
No way.
You had to.
Yeah, you had to.
Okay.
Even if you couldn't sing or dance, you better know these songs. And she would have company. She would throw the best parties. And we would have to perform. My grandfather had the Ellis stereo system. Took up the whole wall. The microphone plugged in. We used to have to do concerts for company. And so that's when it started. And my pops was a singer. He used to be in Cameo back when I was a baby. It was called East Coast then.
Wait. Yo, hold on.
My dad.
Where'd that go? Your father was in Cameo.
Yeah, but they weren't Cameo. They were called East Coast.
Because y'all from New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, they were called East Coast.
Were they signed then or they were?
Nah, they weren't signed. They were still on the come up.
Yeah.
And then my mom's got pregnant. It was like, so either you keep running around on the road or you get a job and take care of this kid. So he got a job. But
so he never got to sing Word Up.
He never got to sing none of that. He never got to wear the cob.
You want to wear that, man.
Yeah. So
and it's your fault.
I know. That's crazy, right?
I hope you've given back to
him. I tried my best.
That's crazy.
And so he would always just be singing. Mm-hmm. And he'd be like, come sing with me. So we'd be singing. So it was always music in the house. It was always, that's why I don't know how to play cards. Because when the rest of my cousins was learning how to play cards, I was in the old records.
When did it make sense to you, like, to where you or somebody was like, no, it's not just, you know, young kid performing for company and not just a hobby. Like, this could be serious.
Well, I always wanted to make a record, but at that time, you're talking about, I was a teenager. It was like 84, 85, 86. Yeah. It was a dream. I had no idea how to go about it. Mm-hmm. What changed for me is I moved from Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. We moved to Mount Vernon. When I got to Mount Vernon, I came out of school one day. A Heavy D was right there. We went to the same high school. He's right there. And this one.
Is he cracking?
Money Earner. Yeah. Oh, shit. He had a gold blazer that had Heavy on the window. So I'm like, so now it's real to me. Because back then, all of the artists were older. It was like Kashif and Luther. Mm-hmm. But to see somebody young, I was like, wait, this is a little more real. Then I went to the store one day. Albie Shore was in there. So now I'm like,
yeah.
Because we all went to the same high school. It's one high school in our town. So we all went to the same high school. I'm like, so I'm talking to him. I'm like, okay, now I see. And since they was popping, now everybody in the town is trying to do music. So now I find my way. Like, this one does music. This one does music.
Yeah.
So now I found a way. Then Puff got in the door. Then it just kept rolling.
And so, your first studio session is when?
I'll be sure. I used to run around with Al, and he would like kind of teach me about songwriting and stuff. And he was working on his album, Sexy Verses.
Okay.
So we're sitting there in the Hit Factory. And he's writing this on a piece of paper.
First of all, this is cold-blooded, nigga.
Man.
This is like, this,
no, this is real history.
This is good shit.
This is real, this is real R&B history.
I just want to throw that out there, nigga. This shit is great.
And I didn't realize that. So he's sitting there writing that piece of paper. The track is playing. Vincent Herbert and Kiama Griffin had done the track.
Yeah, Vince.
They were still on the come up, too.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there. So out of nowhere, he's like, huh? I'm like, yeah, look good. He's like, nah, go sing. I'm like, sing what? It was no melody. It was just words on the paper. He was like, I'm going to start the track. Just go in there and sing whatever comes out. Mind you, I never sang in the studio. I'm like.
How old are you at this point?
17, maybe. Okay. 18.
Still in high school.
I got kicked out of high school a long time before that.
All right.
They asked me to never come back.
Oh, you one of those?
Yeah. And I respected their decision.
I respect. Like, yeah. I was a bit much.
What you get kicked out for, bro? We can't. You gotta tell us why you got kicked out.
There's a few things. It was a buildup. Like, it was, some of it was fighting, but I had this one special talent. And security came to me one day. He was like, "Yo, you be in school on time every day. You be here all day and don't go to a single class, but we never catch you in the hallway." I'm like, "It's a talent."
No way.
So first period, I would roam the hallways. Second period, I go in somebody's study hall. Third period, I'm back in the hallways. I go to fourth, fifth, and sixth period lunch. Seventh period,
I... Wait, are you doing 3 periods of lunch?
Yeah, that's the easiest place. But I'm not eating. I'm just chilling. And we had the courtyard. We had dice games and all type of stuff. It was a party for me because my parents were Jehovah's Witnesses. So it was really strict. So the only time I could be me was at school.
It was at school.
Because a kid going to be a kid.
Right. Yeah.
And I couldn't be a kid at home. So I'm like, all right, bet. And they was like, he's one of the smartest kids in the class. He just don't do shit. So they was like, yeah, you should probably. I showed up to this one class. It was, I think it was English in May. School's over in June. So she's like, who you? I'm like, Case Woodard.
No way.
So she, yeah.
No way. Yeah.
So she's like, I'm like, Woodard, Case? She's like, you got dropped from this class in November. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to just go roam the hallways. That was her choice. I was in class. So I
that's how you made it make sense.
Yeah,
that was her time. Choice.
Well, that's what I said in case I got caught.
She dropped me
in case
from
I got
class.
Caught. I'd be like, she kicked
told
me out.
I ain't belong in here.
What was I to do?
What? Did you graduate?
No, he got kicked, out, bro.
They sent me to the alternative school, and I wasn't going there.
So you haven't graduated high school to this day.
To this day.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. That's what I say. Fuck it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the moral of the story is.
There's no real moral. It's just like,
I was going to try to sum this shit up some kind of way.
Get you some hit records.
You need some hit records.
Yeah.
That's the only way to figure this shit out.
Yeah, pretty much. Because I didn't have no plan B. Because I don't believe in plan B. If you have a plan B, you're setting yourself up
for failure.
Yeah.
Is what I always thought. So.
So what do you sing when Albie says... Sing what comes to mind.
I went there singing, "No More Freaky Women," Friday night, 2 or 3 at a time. And I'm singing it, and he kept it on the song. He used it on the record. He didn't give me no publishing, but whatever. I was fine.
Those
it was
those
the experience.
Days.
Yeah,
those days.
The funny part, it never occurred to me that he'd give me publishing until about a year ago. Me and him was talking. I'm like, hold up. And I said it as a joke. Yeah.
Yeah, I had all my publishing taken early 90s.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a thing.
I think I got a $750 check for playing
$750
on the live recording, but all the songs I helped write. I was like, yeah, any royalties come in for Hoochie Coochie Man?
Yeah.
Royalties never come royalties in for Hoochie never Coochie come Man. In
but y'all, let me tell you, man. So I wrote the first song on Usher's first album. It's called Baby, You Know That I Can Make It Right. I co-wrote that song, right?
Okay.
You still crispy too.
Yeah. He just dialed it up. He dialed it up.
Nigga's still crispy.
But yeah, I tried to. Yeah. I see it's a lot of us out there. You seen it.
You crispy.
You seen it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, so now my girl at the time, she's pregnant. I need money. So I'm like, yo, I'm just sell my portion. They gave me a check for $4,000. I'm like, I'm rich.
Hmm.
But yeah, that's I sold that. So they gave me like $4,000.
Work for hire.
Yeah, because I needed the money. She was pregnant.
Yeah.
And I had left my job. So something had to happen.
$4,000 in when? Let's say $4,000.
This is 93.
You're trying to put 93.
This is 93.
What it really mean right now with $4,000?
I'm just thinking 11th grade, like
$4,000.
93?
Yeah.
Nigga, you know how many pair of Guess jeans I could, nigga.
God.
The Guess jeans at that time, if you go to the outlet,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I went got the hockey jersey.
They was up about $20-something for the Guess jeans.
He just answered, what did he buy with his $4,000?
Party
he bought
shirt.
He bought a hockey jersey.
You didn't give it all to the kid. I know you didn't do. You didn't.
No. No, he wasn't born yet. In all fairness, he wasn't here yet.
I'm gonna use most of this.
Yeah, sure. I'm just using this to further the enterprise.
Right.
Like, yeah. This for us. I'm doing this for us.
So you from working with Al B, now you've started to become a songwriter.
Yeah, because he's teaching me structure and lyrics and arrangements and stuff, which I didn't realize that I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I would write songs and. How I started writing songs, I would write songs to the melody of other songs that I liked. And that's how I really got started writing. But he was teaching me about structure and how to put them together and how to make it make sense. And There's certain stuff that's so good that Al has written on that you don't even, I bet y'all don't even realize that the second verse for Forever My Lady don't rhyme.
Never thought about that.
It's so dope this that you don't realize it don't rhyme.
There's no meaning what we do. You know, it does rhyme.
Keep, do the next line.
It's like to me, if I ever lose you, tell me where I go. Life would have no meaning. And I pray that you always stay with me, yeah.
That whole second, the whole second part don't rhyme at all, but it's so,
so good.
Good. Wow. And that's what he told me. He was like, it don't matter. Just make it good. That whole second part, that second verse don't come close to rhyming. But you never noticed that.
Never.
Because it's so good.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's so good.
Sang so good.
Yes. Yeah. Everything about it is so good that never enters your mind. Or Goodbye Love. You don't know what's the chorus for Goodbye Love, guy, because it's so good.
I feel like that's the chorus.
Which is at the end of the song.
Right.
You said you'd never leave me. I said, that's not the chorus. The chorus don't come to the end of the song. After the bridge. After the bridge, the goodbye, that's the chorus. The chorus don't come to the end of the song.
Wow.
Fucking hell, be sure.
No, that was Aaron. That was Aaron Hall.
Aaron wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
But what Al was teaching me was just to, like you said, it don't always have to rhyme and
just
about what you're saying,
yeah,
and the melody structure. Melody is king was the first that he would always say. Because babies know the ABC song. They don't know the ABCs, but they know that melody.
Absolutely.
So he's like, melody is way more important. But then he also was saying stuff. So he was like, but you need to be saying something.
Right.
So
songwriting 101.
And I'd be sitting in there while he's writing songs, like, just learning, just seeing what he's doing and how he's putting it together and how he's, and I'm just sitting there. I'm like 18. I'm just sitting on the, you know, the Hit Factory had that little ledge. I'm sitting there just chilling, being quiet so nobody will notice I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. So are you signed to him or anything? He's just like, it's my young homie from Mount Vernon.
Yeah, it was just that.
I'm going to put him on.
Yep, and JoJo Brim, me and him was best friends.
My nigga.
Yeah, he just landed actually.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay.
But we've been best friends since we was about 18.
Mm-hmm.
So they were best friends, and that's how I got in with Al. And he was like, yeah, you know, we're going to die together. You know, that's Al's thing, we're going to die together. He was like, yeah, I got you. I'm going to teach you. So I just sat there and just soaked it up.
How many years are you with him? Just working and writing? And are you singing? So obviously you're singing on the demos too.
Yeah, I'm singing references. I got a reference in my phone from 1991. It's me, my homeboy Brian, and Dave Hollister.
Wow.
To a song that Kyle West produced and Al wrote. It's dope.
Ah, man.
So we singing references
all
for him.
All legends.
Yeah, we singing references. That's it. Casey and JoJo and Dave Hollister was doing references too at the same time. They were doing the references for Tevin Campbell. We were just all, he had a bunch of singers that he would have do references for him, and that was us. It was me, Casey and JoJo, Dave Hollister. It was a whole team he had. My man T.L. Cross, he had all of us just doing stuff. So we all learning from him.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you know Jonathan Hall?
No. Who's that?
Okay. He's from Jersey.
He's not by name.
Related to Aaron and all them.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So at this point, when you're doing demos, you're writing, you're singing background, you're doing everything you possibly can in the business, are you actively pushing toward a solo career?
No. Actually, it was me and a good friend of mine, Lil B. We were a duo called Black. And we went up to Uptown and Jimmy Jenkins said he was going to sign us. He loved us. And it never happened, of course. And then a few months later, there was a group we were in the same management group called La Day. And one of the members of La Day got kicked out. It was a four-man group. And they wanted me and Brian to join La Day. So Brian came to me. They already had a deal. So Brian was like, yo, I'm broke. You broke. I'm like, nah. He was like, well, would you be mad if I did? I'm like, nah, do your thing. No hard. We spoke the other day for 3 hours. That's my man. I'm like, nah, you know, hard feelings, do your thing. And it's at that moment, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do it by myself. So
that's how you become a solo.
That's how I became a solo. Because I was always trying to be in a group for some reason. Because I love commissioned and guy and gap. Yeah. So I wanted to be in a group.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it never occurred to me to go solo.
So what's your first move? Now you're solo. What are you doing?
What am I doing? Still recording just demos. And I think it was Dom. What's his Dom's name? He passed away recently too. Exotic Dom used to work at Uptown. He was like, y'all wrote a song for you. And he took me to Kyle West's house, who's Al's cousin. It's called All Right. And if we demoed it. I'm like, and we, to this day, people talk about this. So it was dope. I'm like, yeah, I did a song with Kyle West. I'm playing it for everybody on the cassette. And from there, I just kept trying. And then me and Misa Hilton, mm-hmm. we went to high school together. And so we were friends from—
So all y'all from Mount Vernon?
Yeah, we all from Mount Vernon. It's crazy. And it's one high school. It's 4 square miles. Half of that is white people. So the other half is two square miles of us. And it's one high school. So everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, you know, I know that you're trying to do whatever. I want to help you. Because she was like, I see, you know, you're a good father to your son. And I like family men and this and this and that. So she gets Faith Evans to write a song for me called Don't Be Afraid.
This is crazy. The name drops. This is crazy. Are so crazy. We got to keep track of that. We just do the ticker every time a legendary name is dropped.
Yeah.
So she wrote a song called Don't Be Afraid. I had signed with this guy, Kenny Smooth, who was signed to Eddie F. Untouchables.
Untouchables. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's all connected.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And then Russell and Leo were looking for— they was like, they wanted an R&B singer like DMX. I'm like, this is Leo's words. I swear to God. He was like, I want an R&B singer that when he's finished, you get off the stage and fucking rob you. I'm like, I don't know about that, but okay. I see what you mean.
I mean, you did get kicked out of school.
I didn't rob nobody, not in high school.
But you could have used it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got what he meant. I'm like, I got you. So yeah. I stole something out of his desk. Right. And he signed me. Like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, so this me, huh?
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Russell heard it. He loved it. He was like, yeah, I'm signing. And the funny part, I'm the last artist that Russell personally signed to Def Jam. LL's the first ever, and I'm the last ever.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Yeah, last artist. Yep.
So did you come with the record? Because obviously you were already working with Kenny Smooth.
Right.
Who produced Touch Me, Tease Me.
Right. Well, all we had was Don't Be Afraid. Don't Be Afraid was supposed to be the first single. That was set in stone for, I signed my deal in like March of 95. All the way up to, we didn't do Touch Me, Tease Me till Christmas Eve of 95. Why did they let Russell hear it? He's like, scrap everything. That's the first single. I'm like, y'all just messed up.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, y'all messed up. Because it was a better, it was a bigger record than Don't Be Afraid was ever going to be.
Okay.
That's why you don't let him hear that now. Because for the past year, that was the play. Don't Be Afraid, and then we'll have something else. That was the something else. They let Russell hear it. And so that ended up being the first single. And you're not changing Russell's mind. You can maybe change Leo's, but you're not changing Russell's mind.
If you play me, touch me, tease me, you're not changing my mind.
Exactly. Like, and like, that's why I'm like, why would you play it for him?
So you wanted a setup.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, now in hindsight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In hindsight, and obviously this was a different time than the music business is now where you need to put your best foot forward.
Mm-hmm.
This was a time where people had setup records, get people going, get the interest. So is that how you're thinking of it?
Yeah.
Instead of, listen, I got a smash and the world needs to hear the smash. No, did you know it was a smash?
Yeah.
Be honest.
Let me tell you the truth. I can't pick an up-tempo record to save my life.
Okay.
I could pick a ballad in my sleep.
Yeah.
What I went by was everybody else's reaction.
Their reaction
to it.
And I'd
be like, this is dope. They're like, you crazy? I'm like, okay, this is dope. So no, I didn't know.
Okay.
But by everybody else's reaction, and I keep a bunch of no people around me. I don't mess with yes people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When all the no people are saying, hell yeah, that's what made me know it was a smash.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm like, because here's the thing. They wanted to put it on the soundtrack for Nutty Professor. And that's what Russell said. This is going on my $100 million soundtrack. So what ended up happening is Touch Me, Tease Me went platinum. The soundtrack went platinum. But now when my album comes, nobody's buying the album because of Touch Me, Tease Me. We already shot out low.
They already have it.
And that was the problem. That was the problem that I had. I saw that one coming.
Right.
So.
Kind of a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's definitely that. It's definitely a good problem to have in hindsight. But at the time, I'm like, damn, we might have just messed up. Because in my mind, I'm like, I don't know how many shots I'm going to get at this. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and also at that time, like, you know, when you're in it at the moment, you don't know that you're making generational records.
Right, right.
You don't know that you have a record that is now going to be played in clubs in
every
2024.
Party. Yeah, every party, yeah. Had no idea. I had no idea if it was even good or not. I had to ask people. So,
sheesh. Did you know Foxy already?
No. What happened was we were trying to, we had the record done. We did it Christmas Eve, like I said. And we was like, we need a rapper. He was like, let's get a female rapper.
Okay.
So he's like, Left Eye, nah. Lauryn Hill, nah. Lil' Kim. Went through the whole list. And then somebody was like, yo, Foxy. And this is when Ashacha came out and she was starting to bubble. He was like, yo, she's right on our label. Nobody thought of that. Called her. She came in, did it one night.
She went crazy.
Yeah, she went crazy.
She killed that record too.
I got a picture of me and her in the booth. I got a 40 of St. Ives in my hand.
Yeah, St. Ives.
I had a 40 of St. Ives.
You were DMX.
Yeah.
You
were DMX. Yeah, I guess so.
It just made sense.
Yeah, there's a picture of us in the studio in the booth. I got a 40 of St. Ives and we was laughing about something. But yeah, that's how we ended up getting Foxy because we was like, we need a female rapper. And we just trying to figure out who.
You're right.
Give me... because at that time, like, promo tour was a thing, right?
Yeah.
They put you on a promo tour, mm-hmm. and then you get to watch the audience build if you have that kind of record. You get to see it go from 75 people to 7,500. Give me that that layout in terms of you get on that first van and go do your first.
Well, my first promo tour wasn't like that. The second one was. My first promo tour, they had an event. Remember the briefcase from the beginning of the Touch Me, Tease Me video?
Yeah.
Okay, so they had the briefcase and it was filled with money. Mm-hmm. And they had, it was these intimate clubs up and down the East Coast. And there was a contest and the winner, whoever's key opened it, won the money,
okay.
So the audience didn't really build because the record was a hit and it was real intimate. So it wasn't really shows. And I would sing Touch Me, Tease Me and only Touch Me, Tease Me. Until I got to Atlanta. We get to Atlanta because Kevin Lyle was like, nah, only sing Touch Me. Nobody wants to hear a bunch of records they don't know. So I'm like, okay, he knows better than me. So it's me and Foxy. We in Atlanta pulling up. It's so packed that there's cars parked on the highway and people is walking from the highway to the club.
Yeah.
It's jam packed. Yeah. So we in the back. I'm like, you're about to get busy. We go out on the dance floor and Foxy almost slipped. Somebody spilled beer. So stop the music. We go in the back while they get it cleaned up. Go back out. Now it feels like we're still on ice. So we perform, we stand in one spot. DJ plays the wrong version. He plays the version of Touch Me, Tease Me without Foxy. So she did her second verse, but first verse was all messed up. And he told me don't sing any other records. So I'm like, okay, good night. He's like, boo! I'm like, I called Def Jam. I'm like, yeah, from now on, I'm doing what I want. And the next show is in Detroit and I did a whole show. People's like, I was in Atlanta. How come you didn't do that? I'm like, listening to somebody else. So my first promo tour wasn't really like what you, the second one was like that. But the first one wasn't like that. It was real intimate.
So by the time it got to the second one, they was packing it out for you already.
No, not really, because this was the thing. And I feed off of people not believing in me. I don't know why, more than I feed off of people believing in me. Mm-hmm. And the knock on me was, yeah, he can't really sing because Touch Me, Tease Me, anybody could sing that. And I agree. And so when it came time to do the second album, Kedar was in Lior's office, he played Faded Pictures. And he was like, yeah, Joe, this is Joe's record, but he wants to do it as a duet. So Lior was like, what about Case? And Kedar said, yeah, but Case can't really sing. I had just recorded Happily Ever After. So he was like, Kathy, bring that fucking Case record in here. So he plays it, and then he calls me in there.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there, I'm like, what's up? He's like, just sit down, you little motherfucker. Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and he's playing Happily Ever After. Kedar was like, oh yeah, never mind. He's like, you're doing this song with Joe. And that's how we ended up doing it. So they weren't packing it out because it wasn't there yet. You know what I mean? And the first single from the next album was Faded Pictures. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of build that up. And that, so.
Was Faded Pictures a soundtrack record too?
Yeah, it was on Rush Hour.
Because I noticed that. Mm-hmm. Like you were, in my opinion, kind of the king of the soundtracks.
Yeah, you know
like
what happened?
All your songs, because Def Jam, those were all controlled by, all these soundtracks were controlled back then by Def Jam.
Right.
And it seemed like that's how they were launching all of your music.
Yeah. Because what people don't realize is that when you do it on a movie soundtrack, the movie company pays half of the cost.
Talk about the business up.
So I'm like, okay, if I can spend half the money for the promotion, sure you could put it on the soundtrack. Right. The downside to that is, like I said,
it's on there.
They're buying it from there.
They're buying it from the soundtrack. So unless you got something else coming, you're going to be kind of asked out. The soundtrack's going to sell. And then when you drop yours, and I learned that from the first time, so I made sure it didn't happen the second time.
What do you mean you made sure it didn't happen the second time? As far as what? Because you said it.
Having something to come behind
it. You had another record ready.
Yeah, I had one locked and loaded this time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was
Happily Ever After.
Yeah. Yeah. But we jumping.
Yeah.
Cause you said you're gonna give us a story about this Joe thing, man, and y'all really rocking together.
No, that was it.
Okay.
He was like, he can't really sing and this and that. And then when he played him Happily Ever After. I mean, yeah, Happily Ever After, he was like, okay, yeah, never mind. And then we ended up doing the record.
Because
who produced Happily Ever After?
Joe.
Chris Henderson
produced Happily Ever After.
Yeah, Chris Henderson.
Yeah. But Joe, because We love Joe here.
Yeah, that's my
guy. We all love Joe.
That's my guy.
The experience of, did y'all even know each other yet?
No. I actually don't think we had ever met at that time.
But this wasn't the age of, I'm going to send you the MP3.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get in the studio.
And the first night we got in the studio, somebody bought a bunch of strippers.
You just said you.
I didn't say that. Wait. Hit him there. Nah, these ain't the droids you're looking for. No, I didn't say that.
I hit you tonight.
It's funny you think I said that.
Okay, so the strippers.
The strip somehow.
They appeared.
Okay. So faded pictures. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. It was a different time.
Right.
So we got a dice. So then Joe got somebody brought him an envelope of money. Yeah, like $10,000. So I pull out the dice. So we got a dice game. He takes all my money.
Joe?
Yeah. So now I'm like, nah, I'm putting up jewelry. And they was like, yo, this game is over. So then the session is getting done, whatever. And at the end, said the deaf team was like, you guys sound drunk. Like, I don't know why that is, but okay. So like, we went back like two nights later.
Yeah. Me?
Anyway,
drunk?
And I'm not drunk.
Nah.
I'm on medication.
You tripping.
Yeah. So then we go back like 2 days later, we knock it out. It was fine. So
y'all had to sing that twice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had to sing all of mine. His parts was pretty much done, okay. Except for the new stuff that we added. So yeah, we had to do it again. But it was fun.
Yeah,
see, it was fun.
Them is the R&B stories we love.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Man, don't you miss those days?
Oh, man.
When somebody showed up with a bunch of strippers.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
And some dice?
And some dice. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you got the dice. Yeah. I know you got the dice.
Yeah.
Oh, we should have had some. I didn't know you got down. Like, you
man,
know.
Man, listen.
I move a little dice in my time. I learned from, you know, my constituent here.
I stopped with the dice.
I some with me. They're attached to my keys.
I learned my lesson.
Are those the Omarion dice?
No. We got rid of those a long time ago. Yeah.
Oh, you had the trick dice?
No. See, look what you started.
No, they're not trick dice. He just don't. See, this nigga's lucky.
Yeah, nah. I just
don't play dice with him.
Hit him for $15,000 some years ago. That's, ooh, you know. This...
He waiting on the song. This man, Omarion, is waiting on a life-changing song.
Me and my
song.
Nigga Lil Roddy, man.
And this nigga's taking his money.
And you in his pockets.
In his pockets.
We was just having...
What kind of man are you?
What kind of...
We was trying to pass the time.
But it passed.
We was trying to pass the time.
I'd be mad. I was mad as hell with Faded Pit. I know that feeling. You like, I don't even want to sing this shit.
But you got it all back with the hit record.
Yeah, that makes sense now. It ain't make sense that night. Yeah,
smash.
That night, I'm like, boy, I never forget you for this shit. So that you, night, you mad as hell.
What
you,
is your first tour?
First tour was me, Drew Hill,
ooh,
Faith Evans,
oh man,
and Total.
Oh, y'all was cooking.
And that was the tour I had my tour bus, had my whole album cover on.
Of course.
Oh, I was like,
of course.
I got pictures of it in my phone. I was like, Mom, look at this. You had the little yellow camera. So that was the tour because Happily Ever After was out.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first show was in D.C. at Constitution Hall.
Come on, Constitution.
So man. I get on stage and everybody knew Faded Pictures and Touch Me, Tease Me. When Happily Ever After came, they sat there. It was like two people clapped. They sat there. When I hit the long note. No, literally. Then when I hit the long note, then everybody clapped, but nobody got out their seats. Second show, when the piano starts, it was like maybe 50 people clapped. A couple people stood up. Everybody clapped when I hit the note. By like the third, fourth show, soon as everybody stood up, I was like, oh shit, we got one.
It's cooking.
That's experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we got something.
Yeah. I never forget JoJo playing me that record.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke about it on another episode, actually, when music came, because I also never forgot when him playing me Love the first time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got a story about music.
No, he
too.
Used to pull up and just have smash. Like, y'all just had smashes at this time, bro. Like, these records were insane.
Going. Yeah.
And he's like, man, we got one. He was like, we got the wedding song of all time. The wedding song of all time, nigga. I'm telling you, I'm the problem child. You
call yeah, 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 yeah,
like,
yeah.
Nigga, I'm the problem child. Nigga, I got the. And that nigga played Happily Ever After, and I was like, this shit is special.
Yeah, I still do it at weddings to this day.
It's special.
You call. It's crazy, right?
Even if you're not there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to play.
But you know what's crazy? When I first did my first interviews coming in the game, they'd be like, what do you want to accomplish? It was never money, awards. It always was. I wanted to make music that, because my parents were still listening to old mm-hmm. music. I'm like, I want to make music that when people get that age, they still want to hear it. That was my only goal. Because that then you live forever. When you make trendy stuff, you're there. And right. There's some people that's going to reminisce over it. But when it's classic and it's quality, they're gonna remember it. And they're always going to want to hear it. And that's what I wanted to do.
You got some of them.
But I think, like, and just to add to what you're saying, like, it wasn't not trendy. It wasn't not for the time. it was just very good music.
Yeah, but there's a difference between For the Time and trendy.
Well, I mean, it wasn't.
When
it's
I say
hard
trendy,
to say because in 90s, I don't remember a lot of trendy music in the 90s. I remember in the 90s, it was a lot of great music in the 90s.
You had a couple, some trendy stuff.
Far and few in between.
Yeah. A lot less than,
It was way less than now. Yeah. If there was 80%, 85% quality music in the 90s that is still played to this day. And I think that was the trend.
Yeah.
In that time was, you got to make some fire shit.
I think a lot of us felt that way. Yeah, I think a lot of us felt that way.
That was the now today's trend is
go viral.
You just got to make TikTok, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying that to say, like, that was the trend. To be fly, to be fired, to have some substance.
And you want something that's going to be around.
Man, that was it.
Yeah.
People were signing that.
Yeah, that's what they was looking for.
That's what they was looking for.
Yep.
Where's the all-timer, as Clive Davis would say?
Yeah, that's what they was looking for. And that's why, but the music reflected that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what they was looking for. The musicianship in the music.
Yeah. Yep. Nigga, y'all wasn't singing through no auto-tune. Never heard of it. Y'all was standing on business.
Yeah, it's like sing.
Nigga.
Like you better sing. That's what Uncle Charlie used to come to me, you better be singing, boy. Keep gapping.
Yeah.
That's every phone could keep gapping, baby. And he'd hang up.
I mean, at the end of the song, you said, I can't sing no more on Faded Pictures.
No, that's missing.
I was dying that day. I can't sing no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, look, because it wasn't about punching in. It wasn't about punching. It was about just full out singing.
Yeah.
People don't realize probably how many times you had to sing that song over and over that night.
I only had to sing it twice.
You just sang through.
But because I was sick. That whole week I had laryngitis.
Oh, that's classic.
I landed in LA on Monday. It was like, we got to do this song, Missing You. I was like, all right, cool. I get here on Monday night. I don't know what happened. Tuesday, I can't sing. So I'm like, all right, push it to Wednesday. Wednesday, still can't sing. I'm drinking stuff all day.
You don't know what happened.
I still can't. No. This time, I honestly don't know what happened. It came out of nowhere. So now it's Wednesday night. I still can't sing. Thursday night, I start feeling better. I'm like, bet, let's make it for tomorrow. But then that night, I go to the studio with Ja. We do Living It Up. And then I go hang out afterwards.
Another smash.
Of course you hang out.
And now I lost my voice again. But this time, I can't talk. So today is like, it's Friday. If we don't do it today, we can't do Missing You. So I get to the studio. I'm like, I try. I'm drinking everything all day. It's not working. So JoJo's with me. He was like, I'll talk to you. He's like, yo, he don't have his voice. He's like, we're going to do what we can. So he was like, okay, can you go through it one time? Yeah. So he puts it on. I go through it the first time. He's like, can you give me one more? I was like, so I get to the end of the song and I felt it. I'm like, I can't sing no more. And I'm like this, like, I can't sing no more, babe. And then I stop. And so I go and I'm knocking on the window. And they all in there like this. So I come out the booth and tap. I'm like,
it's still playing.
I'm like, yeah, song. I'm like, I can't talk no more.
Right.
It was over. So that was and that day. It was really over. And the crazy part, both of them songs got nominated for Grammys.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyonce in the video.
Yeah. But see, nobody knew who she was then, really. They was new.
Right, right, right.
Now it's a stroke of brilliance. Now it's a stroke of brilliance. But for me, we wanted somebody for the video. If you remember back then, people had known people in the videos.
Known people in the videos, yeah.
We was like, who could we get? Like, and at that time, everybody was in somebody else's video, so I wanted somebody new. So it was like, nah, Nia Long knows she's in this thing. So we're going through the list. We like, we got to figure out something. And I was at JoJo's office, and BET, one of them BET shows was on, and the video with Wyclef came on. I'm like, who's that? He's like, I don't know. Well, find out, nigga. Go get her. And that's how that happened. So we called down there. They wanted to hear the song, play the song. He's like, I bet. She came up, her mom, her pop, Solange, and Kelly, matter of fact. We had a three-day shoot. It was cool as hell.
Three-day shoot.
Remember those shoot videos days. For 3 days?
Three-day shoot.
I shot slowly, yeah, for two and a half days.
How much money you spent on a slowly video?
About $700, $800.
Yeah, them long
how
shoots.
How much you spent on Happily Ever After?
I don't even know. I think it was about six, something like that.
Yeah, no, it was.
Spending seven, six. We're not talking about 6,000.
Nah.
That's about 7,000.
Nah, nah, nah.
About 600,000.
You're talking about tape.
Yeah, tape.
Nothing digital.
Nothing
tape.
Digital. It's all tape.
Yeah.
You got to pay for the actual tape.
Yeah, the tape was running.
Yeah.
We blew up a building. A whole building.
For no reason, bro. Why?
What do you mean? I was an action hero.
And slowly? Why would you blow up a building?
Because I was an action hero.
You blew it up slowly, though.
We used the stuntmen from The Matrix.
Yeah.
The actual stuntmen. I almost cut my finger off with the wire, the hanging wire, when did my ninja kick. Kicked in the, like, I'm hanging midair, Jay Valentine, in the middle of a warehouse.
I would like y'all to go listen to the lyrics of Slowly.
Yeah.
And then think about all the dumb shit he was doing.
That's fucked up.
What is going on?
That's fucked up.
He's gonna lose a finger to Slowly.
That's fucked up.
Take off
your coat. Dedication. That's dedication.
Drink some more.
Drink some more. Don't look at my hand. My finger's gone.
You gonna join in on this shit?
It was too easy. It was too easy.
At least he had like easy. A whole bunch of roses and shit. Yeah. This made sense for
the. I was an action hero.
Whatever. Okay.
You're right.
All right, cool. It was part of your reel.
It was part of my reel.
It was part of your reel.
It all worked out, though. It all works out.
Thank God.
And now he wanna know why he ain't never seen a royalty.
Not for that.
I ain't seen the royalties for Uchi Kuchi. No, I'm saying, you know, I'm seeing royalties now, though.
I'm seeing
royalties.
That's
funny.
You know
this
we,
true.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, we see royalties. True.
And that's all that matters.
No, those days were just wild. That you were, like, it was normal.
Customary. Absolutely.
If your video wasn't at least a quarter million, they didn't care about you.
Yeah. Right. And then it got to a point where people was trying to top each other.
Right.
Yes.
Once Missy came with the $1 million, her and Busta Rhymes in the $1 million video.
Yeah. I remember I was on the set for Busta when he did the video with Janet.
Yeah.
And we was like, he's like, yo, this video costs, I think it was like $2 million or something crazy. I'm like, wow.
Wow.
Dollars? It's
like $2 million.
Yeah. Dollars.
And was I think Touch Me Tease Me video only cost maybe $100, and Brett Ratner shot it.
Ooh.
Brett Ratner was the director for Touch Me Tease Me. It didn't cost. It cost nothing because it was real simple.
Right.
But yeah, we were spending money on in hindsight, I guess it didn't make too much sense, but it made so much sense at the time.
No, but this was part of making the stars.
Yeah, this was part of it, yeah.
It's like we're making movie stars. We're making entertainers.
Yeah, it was necessary.
You know what I mean?
It was necessary. It didn't have to cost that much.
The video moved the needle.
Yes.
Thanks to Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had a fire video that could change the complexion of your song at radio and all of that.
And just in general, just for the consumer.
Yep.
Because there's been plenty of times I heard a song and I was like, you see the video back. Now, wait a minute. This is kind of.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And, right. And that happened. That happens sometimes. So.
How was it being signed to a rap label?
Yeah.
As an R&B artist? Because, yeah, you can say, okay, they was talking about the R&B DMX, but you're still an R&B singer at the end of the day. And this is historically a rap label.
It has some trying times because. The sensibilities between hip hop and especially a hardcore hip hop label and R&B, sometimes they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can't really explain it to them. Other times they would listen to the people that they had in place that did get it.
Right.
But there were definitely times when it was stuff that I feel like we should have did, things that we could have done that didn't happen because they didn't get it.
They didn't get it.
Yeah, and that's the only downside to something like that.
Did you find, you know, because Tank talks about this, because you kind of have one of those names too, even though your real name is actually Case.
Mm-hmm.
You have a name that is not R&B.
It could go either way.
It could go, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you don't know if Case is a rapper, you don't know if Case is a... So did you have that early on too where they were putting you on these shows, especially because your first record came with a rapper too?
Yeah.
Where you're like the only R&B guy and it's you... Method Man, and you know what I'm saying? Like,
well, yeah, because we did a lot of the Nutty Professor stuff together.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be me, Foxy, Jay-Z, State Property, all of them dudes. And it was the worst. I remember one time we had a show in at the Paramount Theater. You might have been there. It was Lil' Kim, Biggie, somebody else, me and Aaliyah. And I'm like, who did this?
No, I probably wasn't there.
You wasn't. I'm
This was probably like.
This was like 96.
Nope.
Okay. I'm like, who did this? Like, I mean, it was all rappers. Like, it might have been like Mobb Deep. I'm like, who put me and Leo on this show, yo? So it was a lot of that. Like, we would do like homecomings, like Delaware State and stuff. And it's
all them homecomings.
Yeah, we did all of them.
Super wrapped out. Like, when I came in, it was the Dirty South was on the rise.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So I'm in there with Yin Yang Twins.
Ludacris singing Maybe
Miracle.
Because at least he was also singing Touch Me, Tease Me, which is a tempo
record.
I
didn't have a Touch Me, Tease Me.
Right, yeah.
I'm singing I Deserve after a nigga say, bop, bop, whip me. I'm like this.
Oh, yeah, that's how it worked.
Who's going next? You. Me?
Yeah, that's how it worked. Yeah.
Nigga.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just ran into one of the Yin Yang Twins at in Vegas the other day. He's like, "What up, Thang?" I'm like, "Man, Y'all used to kick my ass, man.
Y'all used to kick my ass, man.
Yeah.
But it was like my name was Tank, like you said. So, like, they wouldn't even listen to my record, the radio station. Like, well, just send him down here and put him on this show, and then we'll think about putting his record in. And I'd end up me and Little Mo on all hip-hop shows.
Ain't that the worst show?
It was in the beginning.
I hated it.
Because it's like, nobody's there for me at all.
At all. At all.
Like, not only do they not know me, but who's the nigga singing?
Right.
Why is the nigga singing?
Read the room.
Hey, nigga, if the room was not a room for me.
That happened to me in Philly one time at the Del East. They put me on a show with the Whispers. So I'm looking out there. This is a Whispers crowd. All my fans, we still, you know, they was way in the back because they ain't had no jobs and stuff back. We were still in our 20s. So I'm on stage. OG's like, pull your pants up. So I'm like, okay. So I'm performing.
They're yelling that from the crowd.
Yeah, it was the same dude. So the crowd is laughing, right? It was the same dude. He like, where the Whispers at? A little bit later, I'm like, stop the music, yo. I'm like, I don't know if y'all old asses got to go to work tomorrow or whatever, but I ain't going nowhere. The Whispers in the back somewhere. So I looked at my Bernard Bell, God bless the dead. He was my MD. I'm like, B, you know what to do. So we went hard. Time I was done, got a standing ovation. By the time we got back to the hotel, I was on the news, B. I'm like, there go the Whispers. I'm like, but I know that feeling of they didn't come for you. You're like, damn, I wish to, do we got to make the show this long tonight? Like, you want to get up out of there.
So I'm on a show in Baltimore with Erykah Badu. I'm like, yeah, you're going to show to Erykah Badu? I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. Hell yeah. Come out there. I'm doing my aggressive R&B thing. I'm well coated in oil. done enough push-ups to make this exciting and interesting.
It should be okay.
Should be okay. Nigga, shirt off.
You just think it's all women.
I'm Erykah Badu. Nigga, they are sitting in the audience like this.
Oh, I hate that.
You ain't got no incense, nigga?
I was thinking that in my head, like, you left out the incense.
You ain't got
You had shoes on?
Where's your wrap? I had my shoes on.
That was the first mistake.
That's the first
mistake. Yeah, you got to be barefoot. You got to be. You got to be barefoot.
I
learned that doing shows with Eric Benet. This is a barefoot experience.
Listen.
It's a barefoot experience.
It's a thing. It's a
and
thing.
We're not talking about the wine. I literally was like, what is going on out here?
Yeah.
They were not there for me.
Yeah. And you can't take it personal.
They weren't
take it
there
personal
for none of my energy either.
Right. Mm.
They weren't there for that.
Yeah, yeah.
They came for a seance.
They wanted to hear you say beloved a lot.
They want...
I'm telling you. Because I've been in... I know joints like that, dog. You gotta... Like, it's certain audiences that ain't... it just ain't... It ain't for you sometimes. Am I lying, though? The beloved audience is not really...
Amen.
They don't be checking for some of the stuff we be doing.
Oh my God.
Now you definitely have to, I mean, even when, you know, still as even from the management side for me, when certain shows come in, I'm like, yeah, I don't know how that one will make sense.
Yeah.
And we have those conversations. I'm like, you know, because at first early on, I didn't used to think to ask who's on the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because we grinding.
Right. We need that money.
Yeah, we get into these shows. And then it started to be like, you know what? I need to ask who's on the lineup.
Yeah.
Because we've been to one too many shows that just don't make sense.
Right. Foolishness.
And you're not getting the best experience out of it. And he can't give his best because, like he said, they wasn't there for him.
Yeah. And they make it known.
You got to get to your people.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool, right? Like, you get a couple extra.
Find your tribe.
Fans out of performing with certain people.
Right.
But... these crowds and these audiences, especially whoever the headliner is, if you're not the headliner too.
Yeah.
Yep.
They're coming for the headliner. They're coming for the Whispers,
that's
like you said.
Yeah, that's what they came for.
They was coming for Badu.
Yep.
So
and
in
it's
that
worse
space,
now though, because everybody got a camera.
Right.
So now everybody is filming this now.
They can document
the debacle. Document that this happened.
Yeah, nigga, it wasn't sweet right here though.
Yeah. Like, I be killing these shows. that's different. Yeah. Sir?
Who do you pattern your vocal after? I have a guess, but I want who do you think you
It's a combination.
Okay.
It's a lot of Charlie Wilson.
Whole lot of Charlie.
Yeah, it's a lot. I remember he used to call and just be like, yeah, this is how you do it. I sat on the floor behind him while he was, I wrote a song for him. And he's doing the vocals. He's like, how you want me to sing it? I'm like, sing it. You can sing it in Spanish if you want.
Right, yeah, like, right.
So I'm sitting on the floor while he's doing his vocals. Mind you, there's no iPhones. I'm just sitting there like a kid. And he's doing his vocals. So yeah, it's like Charlie is Marvin Gaye in there. Some David Ruffin. It's just different stuff.
You Charlie.
Like, yeah, that's.
You're like Charlie.
Yeah, he's
Hall.
One of the disciples.
You're like Charlie.
I'm a little capper. I got that too. Yeah. He was like, he brought me on stage one day. He's like, okay, this is when they was all on stage. Gapping. He was like, he's gonna get gaptized tonight.
He's gonna get.
So he's like,
gaptized.
He's like, this is gonna be his gaptism tonight. We gonna gaptize him tonight.
Yeah. You got a gaptism.
I got gaptized on stage in St. Martin.
We need to talk to Uncle Charlie.
He brought me on stage, and here's what he did. So I met him earlier that day. So he's on stage, I'm at the concert, he's like, yeah, there's a young brother, you know, I met him, I really enjoyed his work, da-da-da, which I think maybe I should do a song with him, blah, blah, blah. So now I'm mad as hell, like, because everybody with me knew he was going to bring, I didn't know. So I'm like, who he about to bring up here? I'm heated. I'm like, he should bring me up there. So he's doing this whole big build-up, and then they bring me, I'm like, oh, me! And I did Yearning for Your Love with them.
Oh, that's great.
He was like, okay, you've been gaptized. And Uncle Ronnie, he was like, you've been gaptized now, young nigga. He on the bass, he like... Yeah, that was funny. He's like, yeah, you've been gaptized. Now you're a little gapper.
I haven't been gaptized.
I got my little gapper tattoo, too. We got the baby gappers, the old gappers, your love nappers, your toe tappers. You remember he used to say all that shit?
Oh, yeah, when he was
W-E-G-A-P.
Yeah, when he was on his Abba Dabba Q.
He was on his You Feel Me.
No, it's crazy, though, because I feel like when I met you, was during the phase of you were kind of in and out.
No, I was out by the time I met you.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, and obviously we met through JoJo.
Yep.
And I remember I pulled up to your crib.
Yep.
That I pulled was up my to your crib in Atlanta.
Yep. Right in Buckhead.
And I had the cousins with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had Ron and Don with me.
Yeah.
Full gangsters.
Yeah.
And I just remember us leaving and them niggas being like, that nigga K's crazy. These was two full-fledged, you know, gangsters.
Yeah, yeah.
Them niggas like, that nigga K's crazy.
Nah, around that time, my crib was wild, B.
Man.
Yeah, dog. And I tell my crib, what we used to do is go to the strip club, hang out, whatever. After the strip club, they all come to my crib.
Which strip club?
What club is it? I think that was the Masters.
Because were you in, you were in Buckhead?
I was in Buckhead.
You was in Buckhead. Yeah.
And so... If you come, you came on a tame night.
A who night?
A tame night. On a so we come in, it's like Sodom. My homeboy was like, yo, come here. I'm like, what's up? He's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, nothing. Come with me outside. I walk outside. He's like, he opens the door. He's like, now look around. I was like, yeah. He's like, this shit don't look real. What's the problem?
Nigga was like, I don't
but
see
this shit look like a, he's like, this shit look like a Guns N' Roses dressing room. Like it was chicks the on the dining room
himself,
table.
The nigga was calling himself Blacks and Rose.
But they started
I remember that.
They started that because Mike Kaiser and them used to be like, you know what? When they first met me, they're like, you don't act like an R&B singer. You need to be a rock and roll dude. You act like Axl Rose. I was like, yeah, but I'm black. And that's what I'm black. It's Blacks and Rose. The black Axl Rose.
Hey, yeah.
But yeah, it used to be Buck Wild at that crib. Yeah, it was wild.
I was there on a tame night.
Yeah, they came, it was a tame night.
And the nigga still was like, that nigga crazy.
Because I had to keep it tame because I ain't know him and I ain't want to offend him. You know what I'm saying? Because JoJo was like, yeah, he cool, whatever. So I'm like, well, I can't invite him into the full fledged because he might be like, nigga. So I was like, we going to be cool, y'all.
But Nick Case is going to be one of my I ain't saying no names.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that was exciting.
Oh, man. Ooh, boy.
There's some pretty things in there.
It was a celebration.
Yeah.
Atlanta?
Man, oh man. And you wake up the next day, you be stepping over people. I'm like, yo.
Yeah.
Is this around the time, nigga, where you accidentally shot yourself, nigga?
No, I accidentally shot myself February 5th, 2002. The day after the Patriots won the Super Bowl. The first Super Bowl.
Yep. How the fuck you do that?
Dig, if you will, the picture. So I'm sitting in the crib, me and my girl at the time. We fucked up. We've been wilding out all night. So I used to keep the gun behind the headboard. So I'm doing it, and now I'm fucked up, and I'm playing with the shit Not little, but I'm fiddling with the shit when I should have just did it. And I start talking, and that shit went off. It blew my ass across the room. And I'm laying there, and I remember it was the most peaceful feeling. The lady was like, I think you died, because they said I was going to be dead by the time I got to the hospital. But it was the most peaceful, I can't even explain it, the most peaceful feeling I ever felt, and it was just dead quiet. And I remember in my head being like, yo, I fucking killed myself. I'm like, I fucking shot myself. And I heard a voice say, get up. And I sat up, and the TV was black. Good Times was on. It was like 5:30 in the morning. The lights was on. My girl was screaming and running. She ran through the subdivision, back in the house screaming. But I didn't hear none of that. And I went to see where I was, because I didn't know where I was shot. So I went and looked in the mirror, and I tried to sing. And once I saw I could sing, I sat down, smoked a cigarette, waited. But
what? Yeah, that shit was, what?
That shit was wild.
What?
Yeah, that shit was wild.
That what? Was your first thought? I'm about to smoke this cig?
No, the first thought was, where am I shot? The first thought was, where am I shot?
Okay, let's go with the second thought. Where are my cigarettes?
No. The second thought was, try to sing. Okay. It was right
here. Third thought. Somebody give me a pack of Newports, man. Well,
oh, if I couldn't sing, yeah, I was going to finish that off. Yeah.
What?
If I tried to sing, because they said it was like a hair from my vocal cords going in right there, and it came out a hair from hitting my spine. They said, either you was going to not be able to sing or talk, or you would be paralyzed. And he was like, we don't know how. And they did a test. They was like, it missed everything. And they was like, we don't know how that's possible.
Straight through.
He said it went straight. It came in. And they said it, but it missed everything. Your jugular vein is right there. It missed everything. And I'm sitting in there, and I'm like, so people keep coming in my room, because everybody's there. My baby mama is there. My girl at the time is there. And they looking all sad and shit. Now, nobody's telling me nothing. I'm cracking jokes. So everybody keeps coming in the room. So I'm like, why is everybody coming in here? And later, like, because they want to see the dude that they said over the radio was going to be dead when he got here. He's sitting in here cracking jokes. That's why they keep coming in here.
Somebody put that on the radio.
Not the radio. Oh, over the, okay. They would transport me in the ambulance, and they was like, I was probably going to be dead when I got there. Yeah. And they was like, and now they hear you in here cracking jokes. That's why everybody keeps coming and looking in the room.
Coming into the hospital room.
Into my room. They looking like, because niggas like, he in there cracking jokes. They like, hell no. And they looking, they like, this nigga's cracking jokes. But nobody's telling me this at the time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why is everybody coming in here? And they said that was why. That shit was crazy.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
These are the stories that make you feel musical, huh?
Yeah,
this is
what we feel.
That's where it comes from.
Right.
Get some of this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We got ooh-wee. Brother Case, my fellow Del Rio enthusiast.
Yes, sir.
In all your years of breaking the rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting your own life in jeopardy. You know this music thing, man. You do this music thing, man.
Try my best.
You've been baptized.
Yeah, he's a rock star.
He's a rock star. In the midst of all this debauchery that you participated in, I know there was some music playing that ended up being some of your favorite. Brother Case, the world wants to know
what they want to know.
Top five.
Yeah.
Your top five.
We know you got it.
Top five. Your top five R&B singers.
Whatever.
R&B songs. Do you hold a note still to this day? What's your top five? Yes! Right!
If I can't sing, this shit is over.
How? Top five! It's over.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Top five.
Brother Case, your top five.
And they have to be R&B singers.
R&B singers. I mean, they can be
top
singers.
Top five singers, okay. Stevie Wonder.
Talk.
Yeah. Charlie Wilson.
Come on now. Ooh wee.
Donnie Hathaway.
Come on, man.
Marvin Gaye.
Ah.
And Twinkie Clark.
Woo!
Twinkie Clark.
That was a nasty way to end that.
Yeah, I saved that one.
Nasty.
Yeah, I saved that one.
You thought you was going to hit the pitch and it went,
Yeah.
She just do something different.
Dumped something different with a complimentary nod to Ella Fitzgerald, who probably one of my favorites ever. She's a machine. She was a machine, dog.
High level voices.
She was a machine.
Top tier.
Yeah, top tier.
Top tier.
Top tier. Those are foundational.
Mm-hmm. All day.
Yeah, you can build a career.
Yeah, you got to have a piece of, you got to have a piece of all of.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Or at least have an understanding of what those are.
Yeah, you got to be familiar with it.
In order to be an R&B singer. That's a fact.
Definitely.
Top five R&B songs.
Now, this changes depending on the day of my mood. Of course. Tender Love, Force MDs.
Love So Tender.
Break Your Fall, Andra Day.
Ooh.
Love that song. That's actually my ringtone right now.
She's fire.
Ooh, my God.
She's so
fire. Love her.
Yeah.
We love her. She's amazing.
I get her.
Don't You Worry About a Thing, Stevie Wonder.
Mm. Yeah.
Because from the time, as long as I can remember, I could be having the worst day ever. If I play that song, I instantly feel better. Mm. Instantly, to this day.
Yeah.
Come Get to This, Marvin Gaye.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Love it. And Off the Wall, Michael Jackson.
All right, Case, let's put together your R&B Voltron, all right?
Hmm.
You're going to put together your super R&B artists.
Okay.
So who you going to get the vocal from, the performance style, the styling, and then the passion of the artist, the heart of the artist. Who you getting the vocal from to make your super artist?
Getting the vocal from Michael Jackson.
Mm. All tempo.
Yeah,
all of
yeah.
Anything.
Up-tempo, mid-tempo, ballads.
Any of
anything.
Them.
Anything.
All-tempo.
Let him do what he do.
Young Michael was
Young Michael was killing grown men.
He was a killer.
Yeah.
Performance style on stage.
Combination of Mike and Sly Stone.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Sly was a beast.
Beast.
Sly Stone was a beast. We started doing the hand bone. I love Sly Stone.
It's called losing yourself in the music.
Every time. His Woodstock performance.
You know, he's from the Bay, so you know.
Oh, I already
from,
know.
Yeah,
I'm like, the biggest Sly fan, dog. Sly and the Family Stone.
I think that is something that needs to be revisited in music.
The way he changed everything.
From my opinion. Absolutely, the way he changed things, but artists literally losing themselves in the song.
Yep. Mm.
If you go back and you watch, literally, James Brown losing 10 pounds a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he didn't work so hard. Or Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass or the OJs or New Edition.
Yeah.
But you know what I believe? And you correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that a lot of that has to do with the fact that you get on stage and you see a bunch of cameras in your face. Hmm. It automatically.
You don't want
to
mess up.
It automatically, even if you're not conscious of that, it puts it in your head.
Hmm.
That this is live.
This is going to be everywhere.
This is live everywhere.
Right,
this is live.
Right.
Got you.
It's not just a one night only thing.
Right. It's live everywhere. This is live for the world. This is like performing at Live Aid. You're not trying to mess up on Live Aid back in the days or like that. I think that puts something in your head when it comes to losing yourself in the music, in the performance.
Yeah. No, I can appreciate an artist. I can appreciate an artist not messing up on a word, maybe fall. Like, listen, it's just they're performing.
That's what it is. Yeah.
And it's like, because you're not, there's nothing to feed it. It's just this. And the first thing, I remember the first time I saw that, like, didn't they arrest Rerun for filming the Doobie Brothers concert, for taping it? And then, I'm like, everybody got a phone. I'm like, it just put something in my head the first time. I'm like, it immediately changed my mindset when I got on stage and saw everybody had phones. I'm like, it took me a minute to get used to that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Who are you getting the styling from, the drip of the artist?
Marvin Gaye.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Marvin Gaye.
Classic.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's where a lot of Michael Jackson stuff came. Them aviators, Marvin Gaye was wearing those first. And the military jackets, Marvin Gaye was wearing those first. And Michael Jackson started doing it.
Well studied.
Yeah.
My friend.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he was a problem.
Who are you getting the passion of the artist from?
Ray Charles.
Huh.
Yeah.
That passion there, David Ruffin, passion?
Yeah, that's different.
That's different. That's a different type of emotion.
That nigga will sing about anything.
Right. Very aggressive. Anything. Very aggressive man. Very aggressive man.
That nigga.
Like, he's
his voice sounds tortured.
Nigga sang a song called Let's Go Get Stoned.
You know what he was
I feel like they did it.
I said, nigga, what?
Come on, yeah.
Before you get out of here, my brother. I ain't saying no names.
Yeah.
I ain't saying no names. Where you at?
Yeah.
Who you was with?
Who you with?
What you did? Don't say shit. I ain't saying no names.
gonna break one of them down.
Yeah, yeah, one of them joints going down.
One of them shit's gonna be broke, man.
But actually,
Hold on, set him up. Come on, gather. You gotta gather. Okay, listen. Okay. All right, so we at this, you know, very important segment of the show.
Yeah.
It's called I Ain't Saying No Names.
Yes, sir.
And the rule to the game, just can't say no names. That's the only rule. You tell us a story, funny or fucked up, or funny and fucked up. All your stories seem to be both.
Jesus Christ.
Right? Well, I got one that I can say the names because it's just funny.
I mean,
don't say the names? Okay.
Just figure out a way not to say the names.
What is the easy way to not say the names?
That's all we're asking, brother.
I got you, brother.
You know, so.
First of all,
we would like to live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Come on.
We don't want no trouble.
Then y'all going to be all right. Don't do me like that, young fella. Come on.
So right now,
it's
the man is here, himself.
Himself.
Case. I ain't saying no names.
Okay, so there was a R&B artist that wrote a song for me for one of my albums. So she invites me and my homeboy over to hear the song, because back in them days, it was cassettes. It wasn't no email in the song, right, back and forth, whatever. So we in there, and her dude shows up. He's like a big rapper. He don't know us. So he rolls up and just sees two dudes in his crib with his chick that he don't know. So he looking us up and down, introduced ourselves. He's like, whatever. So we leave. We go to get in our rental cars outside. We get in the car. The rental car won't start. So now he comes out with her maybe an hour later to go pick up the kid from daycare.
Because
we call in the tow truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
We sitting across the street from his crib in the car. I'm like, nigga, this looks crazy.
Oh, that looks crazy.
They come back. We still sitting in the car. I'm like, nigga, this looks crazy. But it's freezing outside. We can't wait outside.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, I make sure I get out so I could tell her, yo, what's going on. But I could see already that he looking like, it looked real suspect.
Yeah.
So finally the tow truck comes and we get off. So then I ran into him. At this time I had a record out. So I run into him and I'm like, yo, remember blah, blah, blah. I was like, that was me. He was like, yo, B, I thought y'all niggas was on some BS. I'm like, nah, we wasn't. And we laughed about it. So, but that almost got real hairy.
Yeah, nigga, yes. Outside his spot.
Yeah, for out, I'm like, yo, this don't look good. And there's nothing we could do because we just got out the car. First of all, it's freezing.
Yeah,
but the neighborhood we was in, it went down.
Yeah, it wasn't sexy.
It went down.
Yeah,
so we were stuck.
Yeah, that ain't cool.
Yeah. Now this is funny. So this chick I'm dating, we go out to dinner at this seafood place. So me and the limo driver, we're like, we're gonna jump out and get the food, leave her in the limo. We get the food, we come out, we're like, where's the limo? So we can't find a limo.
Hold on, you and the limo driver get out?
Get out. We run in, I pull the hat down, we run in to get the food. We leave the chick in the limo.
In the limo, in the back of the limo.
Right.
Okay.
Right. We come out, the limo's gone.
But the driver with you?
The driver's with me. So he looking at me, I'm looking at him, like, nigga, I don't know. So we sitting there, we looking around. Cell phones is not really a thing back then. So we like, yo, what the hell happened? So then we see the limo come from around the corner. But as it turns, it got the whole side of it is a dent and it's yellow. So what happened was traffic started building up behind the limo. Shorty crawls through the thing and tries to move it, but you know them yellow poles
through
in the parking
partition?
Lot? She caught the side of the pole and scraped the whole side of the limo. And then people's like, yo, that's so-and-so. And scraped the whole side of the limo. It just sat there like, sorry. Yo.
Wow.
Yo, the limo driver was sick.
Oh
yeah, she destroyed his joint. Yeah, she destroyed his joint. It was at that moment, I'm like, we going on a second date.
Thug life.
What? Yeah, we was going on a second date.
That earned her a second date?
That earned her a second date. Just the balls of this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I that earned her a second date.
I drive limos now.
This was happening. That told me she do what she got to do.
That told me she do.
That told me she do what she got. Well, if it need to be done.
Any girl that'll jump through the partition already is on some full foolishness.
Yeah, she different. She different.
Yeah, she different.
That's
she
fair.
Different.
That's fair.
Well, Brother Case, man, first of all, it's always a time, man.
Yes, sir.
Anytime we're in the building together, it's always love. It's always a time. We appreciate your contributions to this thing, man.
Thank you.
Your music's timeless.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Apparently you are too.
Yeah, I belong here, I guess.
You know what I'm saying? You belong here, man.
Yeah.
And we look forward to more.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on, man.
You know what I mean? If, as we spoke before,
yes, sir.
The pod, we look forward to more because
yes, sir.
Cause you deserve it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for having me.
Definitely. You deserve it, man. And you have our support.
100%, appreciate
whatever
it,
you need from us.
Yes, sir.
You got that. You already
yes,
know.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Tank.
I'm Jay Valentine.
And this is the R&B Money Podcast, the authority
yeah.
of all things R&B.
You can tell by the way. Staying alive. Staying alive.
That's notification, y'all.
Appreciate y'all, man. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
R&B Money.
R&B Money is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Don't forget to subscribe to and rate our show. And you can connect with us on social media at Jay Valentine and at The Real Tank. For the extended episode, subscribe to youtube.com/RMB Money.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.